Hey, what's up? It's Avery here. Well, I guess who else would it be? It is my own show. You see, my show is on platforms like iTunes and Spotify, and you may wonder, how do I get my show on these platforms? Well, I do it through an app called Anchor. It's free to download, and you can use it on your phone or on your laptop. And it also comes with creation tools that let you edit your show. You can also make that sweet moolah with your podcast with no minimum listenership. So, want to get started? Download the Anchor app on the Google Play Store or Apple's App Store, or go to anchor.fm. It's that easy. What is up? What is up? Welcome back to Avery Sports Show. Summer is almost upon us, but soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, is in full swing. So much going on, especially with our Canadian national teams, men's and women's. So I want to have on one of the top young soccer reporters, insiders the game has to offer. It is Alexandre Gagné-Ruzic. Alex, how you doing, buddy? Welcome to the podcast.
Doing great, Avery. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate you being able to join you for today to talk Canada national teams, because as you mentioned, there's so much to talk about on both sides, and it's been an exciting month for Canadian soccer, and there's more to come, which is even better.
No, of course, there's a lot more to come, and I got to say, you know, when I first met you back in 2019 at the year one CanPL finals between Forge and Calgary, which seems like 1,000 years now, that we were able to go on public and cover soccer matches. It feels like it's
whole other world.
2019, does it?
It's a whole other world. Like, it's just, for me, it's that feels almost like yesterday in a sense, but that also feels like 3-4 years ago. Like, it wasn't that long ago, but it also wasn't yesterday. It's such a weird feeling.
No, of course. You know, now things are starting to reopen again, and I mentioned Canada soccer, and for the men's women's team, we're in a great place right now. Of course, the men's team, the big story, the men's team, for the first time in 24 years, will make it to the final round of World Cup qualification with their big two-leg win over Haiti in Chicago. And, you know, it just feels... We're both in our 20s. The last time Canada made it to the stage, I wasn't even in grade one yet. Didn't know what it was like, but from your point of view, what was it like, I guess, just to see the men's team finally break through to that final stage, in which if they finish top three or number four, they get to at least have a shot at making it to the first World Cup in over 30 years.
It's massive on so many fronts. Like you mentioned, 24 years. That's a long time. That's a good, I'd say probably 20-30% of Canadian fans had never even seen this stage before. And obviously it's not the famous Hex as they expanded it. Thankfully for Canada, it did help that there was 8 teams instead of 6 in the final round. But this is just massive because it's the final frontier. It's not only the fact that the World Cup is actually a real possibility. It's not, okay, you're in the World Cup qualifiers, but you're in the first or second round. No, this is the final round. If you do well, you go to the World Cup. And then just if you take the World Cup out of the equation, it's 14 games, 2 each against the seven other top 8 teams in CONCACAF. Like, when has Canada competitively had that many top-tier games in a short time span? Pretty much never. When you play in the first 2 rounds, it's usually a few minnows, and then maybe in the second or third round, you'd get an El Salvador, a Honduras, a Mexico, or the U.S. if you're lucky. Well, now that Canada gets a chance to play all the top teams in a 7-month span, home and away, hopefully in front of fans too, it's going to be a huge learning experience just for the players. This is a young group. Heck, I think it's 12 of the 25 players in this squad weren't even alive the last time Canada made the final round. So for these guys, it's just as important to play in these games and get experience the joys of San Pedro Sula in the fall in Honduras, or go down to Panama City, go to Kingston, go to the Azteca. And it's just huge on so many fronts, from the players to the fans. We're gonna have plenty of good away and home trips, and it's such an exciting prospect making the Ocho, the Octo, whichever one you prefer, because and then yeah, hopefully they can make the World Cup from there. But just even being here is a huge step.
No, of course, it really is a massive step. And you've seen with this team, I remember back when this team appointed John Herdman to be the men's national coach, there was so many questions about, oh, what's Canada doing? You can't just put the women's coach to coach a man. He's never coached men before. But he's found a way to make it work. And he's this team in a place which he hasn't been in over 30 years. You know, I've known John for a very long time. I met John back in 2013, interviewed him like at least a trillion times covering the women's game. But to see him now in this spot when there's so many doubters, I feel good for him because a lot of people didn't think he would be a very successful men's football coach at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, it really shows that if you can coach, coaching is coaching. There's no, you know, men's or women's. It's just you're a good coach or you're not a good coach. And I mean, in terms of his actual coaching style, I think it's lent well to this Canadian team. I think he's the one thing where if you're going to listen to John Herdman, his motivation is just how he talks is mesmerizing. You can just sit there and listen to him talk for hours. And that's obviously huge. If you're Canada having to go to play away to Haiti, well, the way John Herdman describes it, you'd almost want to run through a wall for him. But even just like in terms of tactics and, you know, X's and O's, he's been making good decisions. You know, maybe he isn't reinventing the wheel, say, or, you know, doing anything that's, you know, not out of the ordinary, but sometimes that's fine as a coach. He's doing a good job. He's taking his pieces. What I like most about him is he's learning from his mistakes. He's had a few mistakes. That's normal as a coach, but we haven't seen him often make the same mistake twice. And that's always a good quality to have as coaches. Cause I've seen a few coaches in my day, they'll make a mistake and then they'll stick with it. And then, you know, it's just like, why? You're just doing the same thing over and over. So at least he's been learning from his mistakes. He's been trying new things. And so far it's been working. It's good for the Octo. They got good players, you know, got John Herdman's motivational, his tactic skills. You have to be happy about where they're at right now.
Yeah, of course, you really have to be. And you mentioned the players, of course, the usual, like the Jonathan Davis, Alfonso Davies, but also Kyle Larin is someone who deserves a lot of love for what he's done. So I remember a couple of years ago, people were saying, oh, can Kyle Larin really be this top pro? We saw him in Orlando, the controversy around there, just how he left MLS. He goes over to Turkey, he goes to Besiktas, plays with Tebow Hutchinson. He's come back now to play for Team Canada, and he has just been an absolute baller, scoring goals and being one of the key cogs of his team so far in qualifying.
Oh, I'm so happy you brought up Kyle Larin, because he's a fascinating story. I mean, myself personally, I had doubts of him, say, in terms of his national team ability, say. I always thought he was a good striker. Heck, I remember in 2016, for example, I remember I watched him score two big goals against Vancouver from about 5 feet away in the stadium. So I've always seen his ability up close. But for Canada, for whatever reason, I do think the fact that, you know, his playing style as a striker didn't lend itself to the old Canadian team. That was maybe a bit of lack of talent. But I think on this Canadian team, he's the perfect guy to be a kind of underrated star, because you got Jonathan David, you got Alfonso Davies. Those are your two stars. And that's good for Larin. Larin doesn't need to be the guy. He likes to be kind of that third, fourth guy. You see it in Besiktas where, you know, you look at some of the names on the list, you go for, you know, a Tebow Hutchinson's, or you got guys like Vida, the defender who's a World Cup finalist, or Vincent Abubakar, who's played for some big clubs. Well, that's good for Larin. He doesn't mind being that fourth, fifth guy, because the less attention that goes on him, he seems to thrive. He just knows how to pop up in those big moments. And I just think the fact on this Canadian team where he doesn't have that much pressure, he's been thriving, and it's been great. I mean, the stats back it up. I think it's, what, 7 goals in 6 games in World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah,
he's second in the region for goals. He scored in 5 out of 6 games. So it's not just like, you know, a hat trick against a small team here, a hat trick against a small team there. They're big goals against big teams. Yeah, Larin's been a, you know, a revelation really for Canadian fans who'd maybe forgotten about him a bit after 2018, 2019, where he kind of fell off a bit there.
No, it's really true now. And now with qualifying now, I know you posted on your Twitter earlier a probable schedule of how Canada might play these nations games in Toronto, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Edmonton. I've been a big believer for a very long time that we cannot just centralize our game just one stadium. I really want to see these games moved around different cities, different markets, not really giving opposition teams a chance to get comfortable with Toronto and BMO. And I feel that our environment in certain parts of the country, when it gets to November, December, can be a major home field advantage on top of the rowdy fans who will be there in an Edmonton or in a Winnipeg. But in the same breath, I gotta admit, as much as I do want to see these games get moved around, not many of our stadiums are on grass. We use turf because also most of our stadiums, the major ones, are shared with CFL teams, and we know very well the issues with the turf versus grass debate in Canadian soccer.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's the huge problem. I mean, if you look across the country, the grass surfaces like that come to mind is, well, BMO in Toronto, you got Saputo in Montreal, and then say you, for example, you got Spruce Meadows in Calgary. That is definitely not up to standard for national team. We've seen it up close. It's definitely not up to standard. So it's a trade-off you have. Do you end up playing on turf? Do you end up playing, you know, on grass? I think Vancouver and Edmonton, for me, I really like both facilities because they're big. The national team has played there before. It's cold in the case of Edmonton. And then in Vancouver, you got the West Coast. It's far to travel to. Mm-hmm. So they both have their geographical advantages. So yeah, I hope they do spread the love about. There is one problem that I, from my research, is just the schedule is ridiculous, really, for it's absurd for no better way to put it. I think, for example, in January of 2022, Canada have to play in Honduras, and then up in Canada, and then down in El Salvador, which is just a ridiculous travel in a 6-day span. It's just like, all right, 5-hour flight down here. Okay, 5-hour flight back, and then another 5-hour flight. So it might be just logistically, their hand might be forced for some of those games. But I look at the November window, for example, it's 2 home games. That could be a good opportunity for Vancouver and Edmonton. Maybe you train in Vancouver because the weather will be nicer. They got the fantastic grass over at UBC. Maybe you play, one of the 2 games in Edmonton. Then it's only an hour flight between the two. And then you can play both. I would love to see that. I think that would be huge because if you look, they play Mexico in that window. If they could play Mexico in November in Edmonton, 55,000 screaming, it's going to probably be minus 10 and minus 15. You can confirm that for me. How great would that be for the national team to watch a spectacle like that? So yeah, I'm all for them spreading the love this octo, because there's so many big games. It'd be nice for fans around the country to experience the thrill of that, and the thrill of potentially cheering your team on as they push for a World Cup.
Edmonton weather, yeah, it could easily be either minus 10 or maybe plus 1. Like, you don't know what you're going to get in November here. Like, it could be anything. You're right, Mexico, like, I'm sure the Mexican national team would not like very much to play. I mean, for Canada, they'll love it. I mean, Canadians can adapt to it, but the Mexican national team playing in minus 8 or minus 9, that would be a challenge. I remember a couple of years ago, Team USA played, I think it was Costa Rica, in Denver in a blizzard, and they hated it. They hated playing in an actual blizzard, and a South American team could not handle playing in a snowstorm.
No, I don't blame them. I mean, heck, I'm born here, and I remember I played one game in a minus 8, and it's just in snow. You show up, there's no preparing for that. The first time you fall, you're just ice cold for the rest of the game. Doesn't matter how much you run around. It's not easy unless you've never played it before. And it helps that you got guys like Alphonso Davies. He grew up in Edmonton, where it's ice cold. You got Jonathan David. He's come from Ottawa. I mean, there are a few guys that maybe it wouldn't be the best for them. I think of, oh boy, some guys do, like Mark Anthony Kay right now does play in LA. So it'd be a bit of a shock of a system to have to go play in Edmonton. But for the most part, I think they can handle it. Just like, you know, a lot of the European guys play in cold places. A lot of the guys who play for Toronto, Montreal, et cetera, they play for cold places. I don't see why not. They couldn't at least make it uncomfortable for the opponents. Cause hey, the thing is, you say yes, maybe it's a bit of cheap, you know, tactics, whatever, but the other teams do it. You have to go to stadiums where you're playing at altitude. People are throwing stuff at you. Your travel is a nightmare. People are, you know, poking around with guns so you go to your hotel.
Yeah.
Everyone has their travel advantages, and Canada has such a geographical advantage. It'd be a shame if we didn't use it. Because what's the point of having this big country with all this, you know, cold or this and that? May as well use it, right? That's what I'm on a team of that.
Exactly. I agree entirely. I moved to women's national team now. I know they played a couple of friendlies against the Czech Republic and against Brazil. And Canada will be in Tokyo. In Tokyo, I'll be in a group with Chile, Great Britain, and Japan. And watching these games, you know, I'm very positive to see this team medal again. But, you know, watching the games against the Czech Republic and Brazil, I noticed that finishing was a big thing that Canada just couldn't do. They're getting inside the box against Brazil, against the Republic. But there are a few chances that Deanna Rose had, she couldn't finish off.
Jordan Heidema,
she had a few chances, she couldn't finish him off. How big is that going to be for Ben Prisman's team to clean that up when you do go into tournament games against Chile, against Great Britain, and against Japan in just over a month?
It's a good question, because it's something like finishing. It's such a hard thing to predict. So, I mean, for me, usually in these sorts of games, I use the chances they created as a metric. And I mean, I was a bit disappointed against the Czech Republic in terms of chances created, but against Brazil, they had, I think it was something like 6 or 7 shots on target, 16 shots. That's good enough. They have the talent up front. You mentioned names like Hoytema, Rose, Christine Sinclair, you know, Nichelle Prince, Adriana Leon, Evelyn Vien, Chloe Lacasse, who didn't even play and who could have been an option. Those are finishers. They've scored goals at the club level. So, I mean, I'm not so worried about that. I guess, at least I shouldn't be, but at the same time, this problem's been there for a while. So you start to wonder, is this national team cursed? You know, are they ever going to score goals? But for me, if I'm looking at positives, I start with their defense. Their defense is ironclad. It's four games now in a row where they haven't conceded a goal, and it hasn't been against bad opposition either. Wales, Czech Republic, England, Brazil, that's four solid teams, two top 30 teams, two top 10 teams to keep clean sheets in those games, despite some of the offensive talent they faced. That's good. In a tournament, defense wins, you medals. So if Canada can keep what they're doing defending, maybe find a timely goal, I do like their chances. And I just look at the names up front that they have. It feels like only a matter of time until they score, right? But the question is, will that be at the Olympics? We'll find out, I guess. But, as long as they keep their defense, they're defending, I like their chances of meddling, because I think that's the kind of the route they're going to take is defense first. And that's fine. You got Khadisha Buchanan, who's a rock and a multiple Champions League winner. You got Vanessa Gill, who's her emergence at center back has been fantastic. You got Shalina Zdorsky. That's such a good core of center backs. You got two good goalkeepers in Stephanie Labbe, Kaylin Sheridan. No reason to deviate from that. I think the goals will come.
No, I agree too. I think the goals will come. And now in this tournament tier, of course, this is going to be a fun tournament to see if Canada can again win bronze. But who do you feel in your mind? Say Canada gets outside of that. Canada most likely will get out of their group. Who do you feel Canada has to watch out for the most if they do get out of their group in Tokyo?
Oh boy, that's a good question. I mean, one team in particular that I've, just seen a lot of in Canada, for example, this camp was huge, is Brazil. They might not be the highest ranked team, but they've had Canada's number, and it seems like in the draw there's a high chance Canada might play Brazil in the knockout stages. That could be a big game for Canada, because for example, the last three games they played before this 0-0 against Brazil, they lost by a combined 8-2. Brazil had their number. Marta and Dabinha have just carved up Canada as of late, and it's going to take one heck of a shift. If not, obviously the US is the world number one team. They've been undefeated for something like 25 games. And then before that, it was another 25, 30 games. They're the team to beat. Knowing the draw, the Olympics always tends to give us a nice Canada versus US in the semis or in the quarters.
Yeah.
So I think if I'm not mistaken, if everything goes right, Canada shouldn't have to worry about the US till the semis or the final, but that's obviously a team you don't want to have to think about at all, just with how deep they are, their talent level, how well coached they are. And otherwise, there's a few sneaky, teams, a team like the Netherlands, who we always forget about. I mean, there's a reason why they made the final of the 2019 World Cup, and they're led by a star like Vivienne Miedema, who scores for fun for Arsenal in the Netherlands.
Yes.
She still somehow got like a goal per game over 90 games for her country, which is just almost unheard of at any level. I wouldn't want to have to deal with that if you're the Canadian defense, no matter how solid that defense is. But otherwise, I think there's just a lot of solid matchups. I think it helps Canada that in the Olympics, only three or four European teams make it, just due to how it is geographically. Personally, I'm kind of a fan of that, because one thing about these World Cups and international tournaments, it's always so weird that there's like 12 European teams and then only three from North America, three from Africa, three from South America, right? So it's good that there's less European teams for Canada, because they kind of have been hit or miss, and there's a lot of good European teams missing out, and I think that benefits Canada, because they enter this team on paper probably a top three, top four team, and that really gives them a good chance at meddling.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you mentioned there, you put it out there into the world, the idea of a Canada USA gold medal game. My gosh, we thought 2012 was nuts to get into the final. Canada US for gold. Oh my, I cannot imagine how that would be. I really cannot imagine emotion for that.
I would break both countries, probably, I think. I mean, the funny thing is, it would be what, if I'm not mistaken, at like 4 a.m. in the West Coast, like 7 a.m. in the East Coast, but I probably could break both countries. I wouldn't want to be on Twitter for that game I guess I would want to be on Twitter for the drama, but certainly if I was some of the people involved on either side, I wouldn't want to be on Twitter in a game like that.
Oh, that would be nuts. And, for the girl, obviously, few more things, Alex. You know, we mentioned women's soccer, Women's Canada, USA, and the NWSL is expanding. They're going to have two more teams. They're going to add a team in LA, Angel City FC, and now San Diego is added. But the big question is that we still don't have any teams over the border in the NWSL. What do you think the reason is we still have not seen any MLS team or even a CANPL team launch a team over the border? Because we have a lot of cities that could sustain more, way more than one NWSL team in Canada.
It's a good question. It's one I think about all the time. I mean, why not Vancouver, for example? Vancouver has such a rich, you know, history of the women's professional game. I mean, back in the 2000s, their men's and women's teams, they were winning everything on both sides. They won, I think, something like 4 titles in 6 years, 2 on the women's side, 2 on the men's side. Some of Canada's top players were playing in Vancouver. Christine Sinclair came through Vancouver. Wow. Sophie Schmidt, you know, legends like Andrea Neal. I don't know why someone like, I guess, Jeff Mallett would be, hasn't stepped up and considered, you know, paying an expansion fee for the NWSL. Or you go over to Toronto, they've, you know, I think a BMO, the 30,000 seat stadium, that would be perfect. People show up for the women's national team there. Mm. They'd show up for women's professional soccer the same way they do for men's professional soccer. It's something I think about all the time, because I don't know what the reason, I guess, against it would be, because it's a growing league. The NWSL, as seen last year, they've been blowing away all sorts of attendance records, TV records. People want to watch, you know, you want to watch these players play. There's some top players. That's what I like too about the NWSL compared to MLS, for example. The NWSL is a top league. You got your Martas, your Sinclairs, you know, your Alex Morgans. You just look across the board. You got the, you know, even someone like Rose Lavelle's been, you know, obviously she played in Europe for a bit. She's still, you know, kicking it in the NWSL. That's some good talent. So I think it would be great if teams could, a Canadian team could invest in the NWSL. Because imagine some of Canada's top players playing together on this Canadian team. Obviously, that'd be good for the national team. That'd be good for just growing the game here. I don't see why not. What I like is finally, you know, this before there wouldn't even be the talks of it. At least Canada's new president, Nick Bontis, has said several times on TV that he and the, you know, the CSA are pitching investors to say, okay, bring a Canadian team to NWSL, you won't regret it. So it's nice that there's kind of that voice of Canadian soccer, because I know in the NWSL, for example, the US soccer and Canadian soccer are very involved. It's just, you know, with how the format is and obviously the whole idea of allocation players. So that's good that he's already out there kind of preaching and putting his voice out there. So hopefully someone steps up. They won't regret it. I'm sure they'll pay a franchise fee of X million, and they'll triple, quadruple, quintuple their return on investment. So I'd say, you know what, Toronto and Vancouver, I'd say, would be the two safe ones, because obviously Vancouver's got that rich history. They got the stadium. You know, heck, as bad as it is to say, they would love to have a team like that, especially with the Whitecaps. The Whitecaps haven't been so great, you know, as of late. Just having a woman's team would certainly, there's a lot of supporters who are itching out for a good team to follow. And I know an NWSL team littered with good Canadians would win, and fans would show up. And same in Toronto, they would love to show up. So I think those are the two cities investors need to be talking about that, because if they do, they won't regret it.
No, of course. I agree. You know, Alex, before I let you go, I do want to talk to you about the fact that we're sitting here as two young Black soccer reporters in this country. And I know down south, you're seeing more and more Black reporters, guys like Drake Hills in Nashville, covering Nashville SC for USA Today. You got Aaron West doing Champions League coverage, Tosin Makinde, Nigerian Scam doing stuff with his shirtless plantain show, and his own Champions League work on CBS as well. What has it been for you to be one of those faces here in Canada as a Black soccer reporter? Because I feel diversity and telling stories that other reporters may not be able to has been so big, and your work has been great on Between the Sticks and in your podcast as well, Alex.
Yeah, no, it's a lot, something like, you know, as you say, it's a lot of pride, because as you mentioned, there's not that many out there, and it's just, you know, it's nice to kind of forge a path. I mean, I think of my father as well. He's Black, a Black journalist who's kind of had to go in a white dominated space. You have to, you know, it's eye-opening. You have to work hard. You look around, there's not necessarily as many voices to guide you. So it's such an important thing just to carve out your own space. And again, tell those stories that aren't being told, because there are so many important stories out there with you know, and especially for me in soccer and Black people, it's a Black dominated space, yet we don't hear about these Black, you know, stories. You look on the field, there's all these Black players, but then you look in the managing boards, the coaches, you know, the media, there aren't the Black people to reflect that. And it's unfortunate, but it's good to try and play a part in that change and tell those stories. So hopefully, you know, in a decade there's, you know, 10 times more, 20 times more, you know, the space continues to grow. So yeah, it does mean a lot. And it is a pleasure to chat with you about that, because obviously you've been killing it lately and just in your hockey coverage, your soccer coverage, everything. So something certainly I look up to, and it's something that I'm proud to carry on every day.
Appreciate it, Alex. So before I let you go, the floor is yours. What do you want to plug? Podcast, site, your platform, plug all your content right now before I let you go.
Sweet. I mean, you can just, yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gongaruzic. You can find my work, btsfancity.com at btsfancity. Third sub podcast where I talk Whitecaps, Canadian soccer, you know, all that's good stuff at Third Sub Pod on Twitter. Just the Third Sub podcast should pop up on any platform. But yeah, thanks, Avery. Really appreciate you taking the time to invite me today.
No, of course, Alex, it's been a blast. You're always welcome to come on the show. And we're going to get down to Vancouver, hopefully before the year is done. I'll definitely come down to Whitecaps.
For sure. We're going to have to link up once again. It's been a while.
It has been, buddy.